Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off, or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs, and My Lotto Rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hey everybody, Brian McClanahan here. The woke madness in history education is off the rails. Well, how do we change it? McClanahanAcademy.com. And because you listen to this podcast, if you use the coupon code PODCAST at checkout, you get 25% off every day, all day, 365 days a year on every class at McClanahanAcademy.com. So go to McClanahanAcademy.com, use coupon code PODCAST at checkout, and get a real history education at 25% off. If you like this podcast and you want it without advertisements, head over to patreon.com and become a member of the Brian McClanahan Show. For $10 a month, you get all the podcasts ad-free, including video, and you also get a special Q&A podcast. I'm only going to answer your questions, your listener-generated episodes, through those Q&A. So, head over to patreon.com. Get this podcast ad-free, no ads, not even things like this, and you really do help support the Brian McClanahan Show with really cool stuff on the back end. Get the book that Kevin Gutzman called the single best volume on original intent ever written, My Founding Father's Guide to the Constitution. It is the book. When people ask me what's my favorite, that's the one. Pick it up wherever books are sold online and get a real education on the Constitution. Should the federal government require voting in elections? Or should any government require voting in elections? We'll talk about that on this episode of the Brian McClanahan Show.
It's time to think locally and act locally. Welcome to the Brian McClanahan Show.
Welcome back to the Brian McClanahan Show. Glad to be back on the program. Very glad to be here. All right, so we've got this question at the Washington Post this week, as to whether democracy is in danger in the next election, whether democracy is on the ballot. Remember, this is one of Joe Biden's campaign slogans. Democracy is on the ballot in 2024. Now, this piece is by a guy who believes that we should have a law making it mandatory for people to vote. Now, the question of whether that would be constitutional or not doesn't really answer. There are, of course, ways you could maybe interpret the Constitution to say the federal government could pass such a law. There is language in the Constitution that the anti-federalists pointed out, saying that the federal government would take over elections. But on the other hand, this would be a hard law to justify constitutionally. I mean, I think it would probably fail in the Supreme Court. Regardless, we have this question of whether people should be made to vote. Now, the other question is democracy really on the ballot? Do certain people in America want to prevent other people from voting, or would they be fine if people don't vote? Well, count me among the people that will be fine if people don't vote. But then on the other hand, this idea that somehow requiring people to vote would even be considered American is also something that's quite odd. So let's talk about this in a historical context. If you go back to 1787, and I'm going to get into the piece too, the op-ed. If you go back to 1787 when the Constitution is being drafted and then, of course, starting the ratification process, you have the proponents of the document, often called Federalists, and the opponents of the document, often called Anti-Federalists. Those terms, of course, are actually flipped. You could say that the Federalists were really nationalists, so they're anti-Federalists, and the anti-Federalists were really Federalists because they believe in a federal republic. So the terms are actually flipped. But the more accurate terms would be nationalists and federalists, or proponents and opponents of the Constitution. So we go back to that time period and you look at what the drafters, the framers of the Constitution were saying about quote-unquote democracy, what the opponents of the document were saying about democracy, and what generally the consensus was on democracy in America. And you can look at the laws of the states, and you can see what people thought about democracy and participation in elections. We know at this time that the framers of the document, and of course the proponents, wanted to trim what they called the excess of democracy. They wanted to keep it down. They thought there was too much democracy. We have too many people voting that are just doing it. They don't really know what they're doing. They don't have information. They're not really capable of doing this. They don't have a stake in the government. I mean, they don't have the kind of property requirements that you would need to have a proper stake in the government. And so you certainly had an anti-democratic strain running through this period of time, the 1780s. Now, the opponents of the document, the so-called anti-federalists, talked about democracy. They thought the Constitution was dangerous because it was anti-democratic. So they had some things to say about it that would be in line with maybe a much more pro-democracy stance. Well, we can't get middle-class people voting, lower-class people voting. They're not going to be represented. We're just going to have the aristocracy, the natural aristocracy, they called it, but we're just going to have a group of people in there who don't really have the same kind of interest for the middle and working class people, lower class people, that everyone else would. But so there is certainly a kind of democratic strain to that. However, when you look at the state laws at the time, there were lots of people who couldn't vote. To say that they were democratic or this kind of democracy would mean that they were maybe interested in a much wider use of suffrage for people that had property, lowering the property requirement, these kind of things. They said, I mean, poll taxes were used. You had to pay a tax to go vote, which would mean that you actually have a stake. You have some cash. You're going to go vote. So there were requirements to get out there and do this. Now, as we move through the 19th century, you get a push both for restricting the vote even further and for expanding the vote. This begins to happen. For example, when I say restricting the vote even further, in North Carolina, blacks could vote until the 1830s. Now, they didn't often, but they could. And in other places in the North, you actually had interest in restricting the vote and not allowing blacks to vote. I mean, these things were on the... This is legislation passed. As you started seeing people clamoring to expand the vote, making it explicit that black people couldn't vote in certain states, or even live in some states. But at the same time, you also had an interest in expanding the vote out to a universal male suffrage position. In the 1829-1830, you had a debate about this in Virginia. Expanding the suffrage barely passed the Virginia Constitutional Convention. There were a lot of people who didn't want it. They didn't think it was a good idea to add more people to the register. What was that going to do? This is the main question. What does adding people actually do? Does it make government better? Does it make government more efficient? Does it make government more responsible? Does it make government less corrupt? Does it do any of those things? I mean, these are the problems that people have. We have corruption in government. We have inefficient government. We have wasteful government. We have abusive government. We have a foreign policy that can be aggressive. So the question is, did expanding the vote at any point in the history of the United States make government better? Did it make it more efficient? Did it make it less corrupt? Did it make policies better? Did it make it more frugal or more responsible with their finances? Did any of that happen? I think the conclusive answer is no. In fact, it did the exact opposite. Once you start expanding the suffrage, you get less responsible, more irresponsible government. You get government that is more corrupt. You get government that's more wasteful. You get foreign policy that's more aggressive. And it doesn't matter which group of people you're talking about here. But as you expand it out, this is what happens. This is what the argument was against expanding the suffrage the entire time. So as you add universal male suffrage, for example, you start seeing bigger and bigger budgets. You start seeing more and more government waste. You start seeing more and more government corruption. Now, it doesn't mean that corruption wasn't there. We have Alexander Hamilton in the late 18th century saying, well, corruption is what makes the British Constitution perfect. We got to have corruption. There's, of course, corruption in all this stuff. We know it. But as you add more and more people, you have a greater chance at corruption. And as you add more people, ultimately what happens is you're going to get a greater push for centralization of power, which, of course, is going to create more and more corruption. So we go from universal male suffrage, then, of course, you have the clamoring for women's suffrage. You get the discussion of removing any kind of property or tax requirement. You get discussions, of course, of adding people of various races or having no racial requirements for voting. Then we look at dropping the age. We're even discussing these things now. Now, of course, in 2024, we can look at it and say, well, yeah, we shouldn't have any racial restrictions on voting or restrictions on sex or anything like that. That's generally the consensus now. But the question is, has that made government any better? I mean, if we're going to look at this rationally and say, okay, is government better today because we get more people voting, which we do. I mean, look, 2020 had the largest voter turnout in the history of the United States in terms of numbers. Now, percentage-wise, no. We had higher percentages when there was more of a restriction. As we've expanded the vote, the more people can vote, but the percentage of people voting has gone down. Why? Well, maybe because people just don't care. Maybe because people aren't really that interested. They just don't want to do it. And the theory would be that if all these people were forced to vote, we'd get better government. Would that be the case? And the example by the dope that writes this piece is Australia. Now, I know there are people that listen to this show in Australia. They've emailed me. So my question to them, do you think that your government, because everyone is required to vote, is less corrupt, more efficient, less despotic, less tyrannical? And of course, if you look at this objectively, I mean, are the taxes lighter, or are regulations better, or any of these things better? Do they have any kind of, is there any example to show that by forcing people to vote, which is what, again, is the model, they have required voting. If you don't vote, you can go to jail. So is it any better because they make people vote? Well, the left might say it is, because they can restrict all kinds of things in Australia. I mean, they have. Lockdowns are severe in Australia during the COVID years. We know that there are extreme suppressions of civil liberties in Australia at times. We've got all kinds of crazy left-wing things in Australia. Now, at times, the right has been in Senate in Australia, and they've had their way. But is this what we really want? If we're only going to say, well, people need to vote because, well, that's better. Well, show me why it's better. I mean, is this objectively better? Or would it be better to say that people have the ability to vote if they choose to do so and not if they don't want to? Maybe as a form of protest. Maybe because they don't want to legitimize stupidity. They don't want to legitimize this kind of oppressive, corrupt, tyrannical government. There are people that don't vote because they say voting provides legitimacy. And I get that argument. When you go out and vote, you're saying everything the government does is legitimate. I've just legitimized the process because my voice is heard. If you don't vote, you're not legitimizing anything because you're saying, well, that's a protest. I'm doing it out of protest. I'm not voting because I don't believe in either side, either party, or any candidate is going to do anything to improve the situation because they're all just part and parcel of the problem. By forcing people to vote, you take away that ability to protest, a very American thing to do. We just think that voting is the way to make everything right. We've been doing that for a very long time in America. People have been voting to try to turn things around. And of course, as you've expanded the suffrage, it's only gotten worse over time. More corruption, more irresponsible government, more suppression of civil liberties, bigger wars. I mean, objectively, this is what you have to say. Now, is it because we've expanded the suffrage? Is it because we have all these people voting that couldn't vote before? Is that the cause of the problem? Or is it just because, well, this is where government has gone in the last 150 to 200 years? We know that when people were arguing against voting, they were making these very points. It didn't matter what group you're talking about adding to the register. It could have been universal white male suffrage. They're making the same points. Well, if we do this, we're going to get worse government. It doesn't matter which group. And of course, it's always said, well, my gosh, McClanahan, you're saying these things. That can be construed as you don't like this group or that group. No, look, you can go back to the arguments against universal male suffrage and say, there's a problem here. If we expand it out, what are these people going to do? They're going to vote their interests. And if they're in an economic block that thinks it's better to take money from the government and prop themselves up or to spend money or to do things like that, well, you're going to see more government waste. You're going to see more corruption. The more money you get, the more corrupt it is, right? When you have trillion-dollar budgets, you have a lot of corruption. I mean, it's all over the place. And everybody knows it, which is why we're just like Rome. I've said it on this show before. I mean, you could go back and look at examples like that. When Rome expanded, I mean, look, the Roman emperors expanded out the suffrage, essentially, in Rome. Made everybody in Italy a citizen. Was Roman government better at that point? Did it get better? Or was it worse? As you add people to the registers, as you get more people who can vote and participate, does it make anything better? I mean, it's a real logical, objective question. And if we have this debate, I think that the people who are for 100% voting, like this idiot at Washington Post, would have a very hard time defending anything but by saying, well, it's better because more people said so. More people have a say. They can vote now if they want to. They just don't. So let's get into the piece. Alas, preserving democracy is not a bipartisan issue. Republicans don't want to preserve democracy, in other words. Take a look at polling data. This is written by E.J. Dionne Jr. Now, he's written a book entitled 100%, let me get the title correct, 100% Democracy, the Case for Universal Voting. What does he want to do? Make it mandatory. He looks at Australia and says, Australia's great because everybody has to vote. Yeah. Take a look at polling data, and you might get the impression that there is a glorious bipartisan consensus that our democracy is in trouble and needs nurturing. No. Our democracy is in trouble. We don't have... The United States wasn't really designed to be a democracy, at least at the center. We can have more democracy on the fringes. We can have more democracy in the states, more democracy in local government, but democracy in the center, the entire system is anti-democratic. With the exception of the House of Representatives. But even there, the states could decide who could vote and who couldn't vote. I mean, there wasn't any push for more democracy there. In reality, there are profoundly dissonant chords in the democracy chorus. Start with the seemingly good news. This is good news. A New York Times Siena poll from fall 2022, for example, found that 71% of Americans agreed that democracy is currently under threat. The question is, by whom? Well, yeah, I think there is democracy under threat from the establishment, from the deep state, from the media, from those that pull the strings. I mean, you don't really have any voice in this. Not when you have 700,000 to 1. This is where this dope is saying, well, we got real democracy. We do? When you're looking at 700,000 to 1 representative ratio? I mean, come on. This is just so stupid. There was hardly a wisp of difference across party lines. 74% of Democrats agreed, but so did 72% of Republicans and 71% of Independents. Kumbaya, my lord. Such data has encouraged conservatives to dismiss the effort of Democrats, starting with President Biden, to insist that the 2024 election democracy is on the ballot. The Wall Street Journal's Holman W. Jenkins, for instance, recently referred to a February NBC News poll showing Biden and Donald Trump essentially tied on the issue of who would be the best to protect democracy. 43% of voters preferred Biden, 41% picked the former president. He concluded, quote, pollsters find Trump voters every bit as concerned about democracy as Biden voters. If that were only true. In reality, only one side of politics is democracy a voting issue, and the other would render our system less democratic by making it harder for voters to cast ballots. Harder. They're going to make it harder. This is against democracy. Like, if we had an election day, that's harder. If we had voter ID, that's harder. What are these people afraid of by saying you have to have an ID to vote? That we have an election day, not an election month, or election 2 months, or election half year? What is the problem with that? What is it by saying that you can't have a mail-in ballot unless you have a real issue, like you're not in the state, or you're incapacitated, you can't get out of your house, you're stuck at home? I mean, what's the problem with that? Did you actually have to prove who you are when you go vote?
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the sound of your engine getting clean. Because BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate clean deep in your engine as you drive, helping your car run better to take you farther. Fuel a cleaner engine with BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate at a station near you. Optimizes your engine's performance from the harmful effects of deposits caused by minimum detergent fuels. Requires continuous use. Results depend on what you drive and how you drive. Comparison made for fuels with the same ethanol content.
This is not harder. It's just saying you got to have an ID. Now, when you look at the Georgia law, which of course resulted in Major League Baseball boycotting the All-Star game in Atlanta, moving it. All the people flipping out in Georgia that we've got real problems. Stacey Abrams running around saying, we're going to have an unfair election. Then, of course, she loses and doesn't really contest. I mean, Stacey Abrams is cooked. You don't even hear from this woman anymore. Why? Because they couldn't prove there was any unfair situations in Georgia whatsoever. And there was actually a video done. I think it was Walk Don't Run Productions, which did a really funny video about all the ways you could prove who you are on your mail-in ballot in Georgia if you had to, and it was so simple that any dope who can make condensation on class could pull it off without an ID. And yet somehow this is harder. This is where these people are completely stupid. But again, this is the narrative. It's harder. No, it's not. Why? I mean, the question is, if the people don't want to vote, or if they don't think they can make an accurate vote, and I don't really know much about this. I don't know enough to go cast a vote. That's a laudable thing for somebody to say. I just don't know. Why would I vote when I'm not really that? I don't really know the candidates. I don't really know the issues. I don't really know any of that stuff. Why would I actually go out and do something that could be dangerous, in other words? I'm voting for people I don't know. In reality, we don't really know any of these people. They're all run by handlers and what their positions are. I mean, who knows? Do you actually know the people you're voting for? No. And when they get to Washington, do most of them do what they say they're going to do? No. You have more control at the state and local level. That Times Siena poll was instructive here. It asked voters what concerned them more about elections. Quote, that some people will cast votes illegally or that some eligible voters won't have a fair chance to vote. The country split right down the middle. 46% worried about illegal voting, 48% about voter suppression. Again, this term voter suppression is stupid. It's not suppression. Nobody's saying you can't vote. It's not even that hard. It's not suppression to say, well, we need to have a, you know, we need to ensure that every vote is valid, every vote is legitimate. We know this happens all the time. We know that people vote ways they shouldn't be voting. It may not be millions of people, though it could have been in 2020. But again, as I've said on this show, there's no way to prove it all. You're never going to prove it. Even when Nixon tried to do this in 1960 and he had teams of lawyers, and we know there were dead people voting in Chicago in 1960, they couldn't prove enough to swing the election. It's almost impossible. These people have figured it out. All the mail-in ballots, and this piece is going to get into that. Well, we know this was great for 2020. We had all this mail-in balloting. It's great for democracy. We know that people were doing things that, while maybe they weren't quote-unquote illegal, they were really shady. And in some cases, probably were illegal. Do we know? I mean, when you have ballot stuffing, ballot harvesting, all that kind of stuff, we know that goes on. You've got people that know the game. They'll give people cash to walk around here, give you $5 if you let me, we'll fill out this ballot right here, and I'll tell you what to put on it. That person's actually voting, but somebody's telling them what to do. We know it happens all the time. Or here, put this and I'll fill out the rest. It happens. Whether people know what happens or not, or whether they can prove any of this, we know what happens. 82% of Republicans were more concerned about voters casting illegal ballots, while 76% of Democrats were more concerned about voters not getting a fair chance to vote. The divide has led to radically different voting policies, state by state, depending on which party holds sway. The Post's Patrick Marley reported that Michigan, controlled by Democrats, voting will be easier in 2024 than it was in 2020, whereas North Carolina, where Republicans hold a veto-proof legislative majority, has erected new barriers to the ballot box. New barriers. See, this makes it sound like they're saying, we're going to disfranchise people. If you're a certain race, or if you're a woman, or a certain age, you can't vote. This is all garbage. There's no barriers. Easier to vote means the potential for corruption is greater. The potential for illegal ballots is greater. The potential for ballot harvesting and other things which are really shady is greater. During his recent pilgrimage to Mar-a-Lago to earn kudos from Trump, House Speaker Mike Johnson pitched a federal bill to require proof of citizenship from those who would register to vote. Since Trump believes that any election he loses must have been rigged, Johnson's effort must have warmed the former president's heart. Now, that slap at Trump is really funny because for years, Hillary Clinton ran around saying that the election was rigged against her. So did Stacey Abrams. I mean, you could say this about a lot of candidates, but of course, they're just going to pick on Trump here. Stacey Abrams ran around for years saying she was a legitimate governor of Georgia, and then she got trounced in the last election cycle. Why? Because nobody likes her. This is not some honest disagreement about whether voting should be easier or harder. New barriers to voting and voter purges are being rationalized to solve problems that don't exist because there is no evidence, zip, that fraud is a problem in our system. Baloney. I could use another phrase there, but Dione is a moron. No evidence. No evidence. We've seen it. On camera, people going in to vote, do I have to show, and they're not the person they say they are, but they get to vote anyways. We know that there are voter rolls with more people on it than actually live in the town. I mean, we know these things happen. We know that there is harvesting. We know there are people that vote who aren't really who they say they are. This happens. It could be a small number of people. But in some cases, that's enough. You have some districts where voting is, I mean, somebody wins by just a couple of dozen votes. It happens. Non-citizen voting in federal and state elections is already illegal everywhere. So notice what he did there. He didn't talk about citizen and people saying that they're voting who they're not really who they say they are. But he goes right to the legal situation. Non-citizen voting. Well, because he's using the Mike Johnson issue. You have to say you're a citizen to vote. Non-citizen voting really isn't a problem. And studies by the Brennan Center for Justice concluded that votes by non-citizens account for between 0.00003% and 0.001% of all votes cast. A separate Brennan Center report estimated incidence rates for overall voter fraud between 0.0003% and 0.0025%. Well, who cares what the Brennan Center says? How do we know? Well, because we have this Brennan Center thing. It's a zip. We know there isn't any voter fraud. We know that's not the case. We know there's no voter fraud here because the Brennan Center said so. The Brennan Center. Yeah, and they have this memo that they released, debunking the voter fraud myth. There's no voter fraud. We're going to debunk this. So maybe one time I'll go through this thing and show. We have these 20 people or these things, 100 cases of voter fraud. You know, we don't really have a lot. It's not that, right? Just because they weren't caught, just because they weren't prosecuted, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Of course it does. Voter fraud's been the American way. Ever since you expand the suffrage, it's the American way. When someone offers policy changes based on claims devoid of any factual support, it's fair to suspect that something other than solving a real problem is motivating their proposals. On this, the Times-Siena poll provided an important clue. It found that while 95% of Democrats said Biden was the legitimate winner in 2020, only 31% of Republicans said this. Their objection is to the outcome, not the process. You see, it's all about 2020. Bear in mind that the voting changes introduced to make it easier to vote during the pandemic, simpler early and mail voting, widely available ballot drop boxes and the like, produced by far the largest numerical turnout in our history. Well, I wonder why. And again, this is where you get into these charges of, we got all these people that are voting that never voted before. And then when you look at 2020, 2022, the numbers were lower. Now, of course, that's a midterm. I can almost guarantee you that the turnout in 2024 will be lower. Not because, people are going to say, yeah, because there's more barriers to voting. No. It's because we're going back to a system where you couldn't just make condensation on glass, somebody hand you a ballot, fill it out, and you go. We're going to a system where it was actually more legitimate that people actually showed up to vote. Got to show up to vote. You got to prove this. All you got to do is just say, I am this person, prove it, and then you can vote. Nobody's going to stop you. And you know when you're in line, you're going to be able to vote as soon as you show up to line. They have to let you. It doesn't matter if the polls are closed, you got to vote. Holding a successful election in a health crisis was a great victory for democracy. No. By the way, the emergency reforms helped Trump get 11.2 million more votes in 2020 than he got in 2016. Yet Republicans seem eager to roll back participation. No. Just legitimate participation. The mail-in balloting is the issue. Even Democrats said this. Jimmy Carter was on an election reform committee that said this very thing. Mail-in balloting is dangerous. You can't prove who did it. How do we know these people don't have a filled out ballot? How do we know any of that's not going on? We know this stuff happens. Just haven't been caught and prosecuted. Because, well, if they haven't been prosecuted, it doesn't exist, according to the Brennan Center. The acid test of whether both sides are equally concerned about an issue is to the degree in which it motivates their respective electoral coalitions. And here the data is unambiguous. Democracy is a core concern for Democrats in a way that is not for Republicans. It's not even close. Democracy is a core concern. Democracy. In a March Quinnipiac poll, voters who listed preserving democracy as the most urgent issue facing the country favored Biden over Trump in a head-to-head matchup, 85% to 12%. That's because 32% of Democrats listed preserving democracy as the campaign's most important issue. Only 5% of Republicans did. That's because these Democrats are dopes. Because democracy is not being threatened in America. But they love platitudes and slogans. Democracy is a take. Oh yeah, democracy. This is the low IQ voters. Like E.J. Dionne. In his book, Democracy and Its Critics, the legendary political scientist Robert A. Dahl argued that democracy was inspired by the vision of people governing themselves as political equals and possessing all the resources and institutions necessary to do so. That's what democracy is inspired by. It's the vision of people governing themselves as political equals. You know, throughout most of history, democracy was restricted to certain people who they thought were their equals, like citizens. And that's okay. In the United States, we've expanded citizenship out. Everybody's a citizen, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, we're all political equals in the realm of citizenship. And all people on the Republican side want to ensure is that you are who you say you are when you go cast your ballot. Nobody else, the question is, we don't care about anything else. Just make sure you say who you are who you say you are. And that's it. If you're going to cast a mail-in ballot, make sure it's done for a valid reason. Like, I don't know, you're homebound, you can't get out of your house, you've got a health issue, you're not in your state, you've got a legitimate issue that you can't vote because you're not there. Those are the things. I mean, Republicans are fine with that. Conservatives are fine with that. Everybody's fine with that. Yeah. What they don't want is people who are going to use, they're going to game the system to ensure that lots of people are voting that, well, maybe can't vote because they aren't who they say they are. Tearing down barriers to participation is more consistent with this goal than erecting them. And again, nobody's erecting any barriers. This is just stupid. It's platitudes. I wish Biden were wrong in saying democracy is on the ballot this year. Unfortunately, he's not. Okay. Again, this is the Washington Post. Our democracy dies in darkness. How about democracy dies in gaslighting? Because that's what this is. It's an entire, they should have just said gaslighting. A last preserving democracy is not a bipartisan issue. Not opinion, but gaslighting. That's what it should say. Anyways. You got to shake your head at this stuff because it's just so predictable. See you next time on the Brian McClanahan Show. See you then.